there was no monthly payment for spouses, orphans, and also the introduction of the funeral benefits. The closing date was the 31st of December 2006 for that one. 2008, the Act dealt with the amendments. Kamila, I think you must just go to the second slide so that when you begin to earn your salary on the fourth slide, I will have dealt with that. Is there a problem? Oh, okay. Oh, that screen, Chairperson, is not showing. I don't know whether it's not disadvantaging other people, but it's fine. Because we do have the hard copy. I'm sure people that can't, if that screen is not helping, people can use the slides in the hard copies. Chairperson, in 2008, then the legislation had to, one, deal with the backlog, but also it had to do with the issue of age, which reduced the age to 30, and that, Chairperson, meant that people who might have been 10 years in 1976 and would then qualify when the age limit was reduced. But also to indicate, Chairperson, that the special pensions was but one of those interventions which sought to address a particular disparity that arose out of the system. There are other interventions that government has embarked upon and that are also being implemented in conjunction with the special pensions. But this had to deal with the gap between those that were able to provide for their pensions and those that were not able to provide for their pensions for political reasons. So in its implementation, there's been a lot of misunderstandings when, in some instances, and as members would realize that in some instances, we get complaints that everybody should just qualify for the special pensions. And yet the purpose of the special pensions, as it is correctly called a pension, was meant to close the gap that existed between the citizens of this country that were within the country and were free at that time, and those that were not free, but also participated in bringing about the democracy that we enjoy today. Chair, without delay, I'm going to then allow Mr. Mgomezulu and Kabelo to walk us through from the slide on the 2008 amendment. Kabelo.
Thanks.
Sorry about that. The Honorable Deputy Minister has already alluded to the changes made since the inception of special pension in terms of the amendments addressing certain areas within the Act that could not address the challenges or the plight of the veterans of the struggle. Now, I'll take the honorable members from the introduction of the 2008 amendment and what special pension has done. The 2008 Amendment Act focuses on a different age category that was not allowed to apply from inception from 1996, which means it deals with the age category 30 to 34 on 1st December 1996, which literally means people that were born from 2nd December 1961 until 1st December 1966. Only only that age category. 2nd December 1961 until 1st December 1966. That's the age that had to apply on for or under the 2008 Amendment Act. And the closing date for that was end of December last year, 31st December 2010. Based on all the previous challenges that the administration had in the past, and taking forward the findings of previous audits that were conducted, including forensic audit by Persison, SIU, and all those, a lot of work needed to be done in the administration. We focused on the streamlining processes and performance management of the whole team, appointment of appropriately skilled personnel in adjudication and appeal section. In the past, within these two sections, there were political deployees that were appointed there. And then the previous audits, the findings were that there was a lot of misinterpretation of the Act. As a result, some people have been awarded or granted special pension, which was not due to them. Some people erroneously may have been also disqualified, which they qualified for. Hence, the appointment of the appropriately skilled personnel with legal background in this area. And also, we had to appoint additional workforce in the regions. By so doing, we were decentralizing the verification process, because in the past, applications would use the Government Employee Pension Fund offices to submit their applications. But those applications were couriered unattended to head office, which is Pretoria. Now, we decentralized the political verification so that members and applicants could be serviced at regional level and provincial level, so that the verification and political research is conducted in that area. By the time the application reaches head office adjudication, then it's a complete and adjudicated upon, which also works on the turnaround time, because we also needed to address the previous turnaround time where people had to wait longer than expected in for the approval of the applications. Personnel were trained in terms of the Special Pension Act and its application. All sections that were identified as being ambiguous in the system were in the Act were addressed through legal opinions, through vigorous training to personnel, so that there is uniformity in application of statute. And then there was an issue of integrating a GPF with special pension at regional level, whereby in the past, in the regions, a special pension applicant, when he gets to the regional offices, GPF offices, he would be treated like a special pension applicant or client, and then a civilian pension would be treated as a civilian pension. So we needed to train the GPF personnel in Special Pension Act so that applicants, when they walk through, they could not identify if there's a customer service agent who's specifically dealing with SP or GPF. Then we also, in terms of the environment, had to in offices, there were a lot of security gaps in terms of the applications, whereby especially at the registry, we had to work on that. Currently, if you go to our offices, which the Honorable Minister has visited the offices previously unannounced, to see what we're talking about in terms of when you say now the place is secure, people's biographies, because when people write their biographies, they disclose a lot of confidential information. Then we needed to demonstrate that there is security in terms of people's files and so on. And then we also increased management capacity and reorganizing of people within the unit. Now, in terms of implementation of the 2008 Amendment Act, we looked at the previous implementation of the past. If you look at when the Honorable Deputy Minister indicated about the 2003 Amendment Act, where the closing date, all people that were left out in 1997 were allowed now to reapply. In end of December 2006, again, we had a lot of people, about 7,000 plus, that were left out. Now, we needed to ensure that we don't go through the same process. We needed to ensure that we sensitize the public about the 2008 amendment and the group that needed to apply, and also emphasizing on the closing date. This was done from January, upon the introduction of 2008, until the end of December 2010. We developed materials and also sent out newspaper adverts, and radio campaigns were published from May 2010 until December 2010, respectively. The Deputy Minister of Finance assisted us in conducting roadshows from August 2009, and then he also made a follow-up the following year towards the closing date in areas where there were a number of challenges on his previous roadshows with us. And then we finished on the 12th of December with the Deputy Minister at a place called in Pondoland in Pizana. Then regional coordinators that were appointed in the regions, they also rolled out an outreach program per district municipality, as the deputy minister could not attend to all the provinces. Now, we had regional coordinators in all provinces that needed to take this forward to all district municipalities to ensure that we cover all places. This assisted a lot, especially in rural areas, for people that could not make it to the towns and cities where the roadshows were. And then there was an issue over and above training to staff members. We also realized that the political stakeholders needed to be given a training. However, this was endorsed by the ANC headquarters and also recommended that the parliamentary constituency officers nationally needed to be trained on the Special Pension Act, so that they can assist members of the public who needed to apply for special pension. This particular training was conducted in all provinces and was completed in July 2010. But we saw a need to extend the training to PAC and AZAPA representatives as well. Honorable members, I would like to take you through the achievements made to date in terms of special pension. When I talk about this achievement, we're talking about the backlog that we picked up beginning 2009 upon the introduction of the 2008 amendment. What happened, we needed to, for us to eradicate the backlog, we needed to split the function in terms of workforce that focuses on the previous group that has been waiting for long, and also another group, which is the regional coordinators in the provinces, to focus specifically on the under 35, which is the 30 to 34 applications. When we started in 2009, we had a backlog at verification level of 3,810 applications. When I say at verification level, these were applications then that were not attended at all, since the applicants have made submissions. We had 3,810 applications. Honorable members, at the end of March 2011 financial year, we managed to reduce the backlog by 97%, which means we only had about 114 applications on the over 35 left. And then that 114 was completed, has been taken forward. Majority of it is, of the 114 that we could not address, is the incomplete application, where a person would have made application, but when the political verifiers conduct verification, either they cannot find the person, letters were written, physical visits were made, and they could not find. As it stands, by end of September, we're only sitting at 10 applications in this age category, the over 35. Then there's also appeal backlog. Appeal backlog at the beginning of 2009 was sitting at 2,106. Appeal, honorable members, is applications whereby applicants were rejected by the Special Pension Board, then in terms of the Act, they had within 60 days upon receipt of the disapproval letter to challenge the decision of the Special Pension Board through appeal process. We had 2,106 of those applications beginning 2009. End of March 2011, the backlog has been reduced by 96%. We had only 76 left. That 76 has since been completed by April 2011. Honorable members, we are currently dealing with the current appeal applications only, not the backlog anymore. And then the other issue in terms of our achievements, there's a secondary benefit applications. In the past, secondary benefit application, they would wait for more than 6 months in terms of spouse and orphans waiting for the applications to be approved. I can confirm, honorable members, that funeral benefit currently, we pay our funeral benefit within 48 hours. And applications are being finalized within 30 days if all documentation is attached to the application. The secondary benefits, honorable members, we're talking about a situation where there is a pensioner who is a struggle veteran receiving pension, and then when he or she passes on, then the beneficiaries are the family. These are the secondary beneficiaries we're talking about in terms, it's basically the dependents of the pensioner. In terms of the 2008 Amendment Act, we wanted to demonstrate how many applications in total did we receive in the two-year period. We received in total 9,924 applications. These 9,924 applications, honorable members, is only people applying in their own right. This is not secondary benefit applications. Only people applying in their own right. And then to date, the total applications that have been processed is 7,563. If you look at this, this is what happened in the past since 1996, where people have submitted, and from 1996, then you come to 2009, where you had 3,810. Already, we have reduced the under 35 application by a substantial number of applications. However, honorable members, upon receipt of all these applications, we realized that there were about 3,440 applicants that were not supposed to apply for special pension that applied. This group is basically the over 35 that were left out on the 2006 amendment closing date, those that could not apply. They reapplied again under this Amendment Act. But this Amendment Act was very specific and clear as to which age group needed to apply. In addition, there's also the under 30s, which means people that were below the age of 30 by 1st December 1996 that are also knocking on our doors even now to say, look, when we joined the struggle, no one asked us about the age. Why now are we being asked about this age requirement? This is ongoing. We, as administrators of this Act, we are at the forefront, and this is a critical area where you really need to explain that, look, we can only implement what is in the Act. We know what you're saying, but the Act says this age category. Until such time that the Act is amended and accommodate anyone below the age of 30, the administration will consider the applications. Honorable members, to date, as at end of September, we only left with 2,361 applications that we need to take forward and finalize. In terms of our action plan, we have committed to the Deputy Minister of Finance that we would like to complete these applications by end of next year, March. Although it's too ambitious, but really, we think members deserve to get their response in time since they've made the applications. The turnaround time of processing applications currently is on average 90 days as compared to previous wage was 1 year and more. However, you will realize that within the 2,361, the regional coordinators in the political affairs would have attempted to work on a particular application and put aside made notes where either the biography is unclear or the applicant did not provide additional information. And if you, every time some of the people here, when they call to say, but how far is my application through the call center? The system will the call center agent will be able to say, look, the political verifier responsible for your file has been looking for you. The letter sent to you on such and such a date, you still haven't responded in terms of outstanding affidavits, or rather people that knows about your service, or people that you've indicated in your applications are not reachable to attest to your service. Those are the challenges that we're currently facing on the balance of the applications left. And this is incomplete application. Here, honourable members, what I'm trying to indicate, there were applications, or rather applicants, that have applied, that the administration has tried by all means in reaching them through letters, telephonic contact, sending final letters of demand, engaging the political organisation in trying to trace these members. But for some other reasons, these people are still not coming back to the administration. We made a presentation to the Deputy Minister of Finance in terms of removing these sets of applications from the backlog and classifying them as dormant. Dormant, honorable members, we are not closing this application. The problem here is, we do not want to take somebody's application through the process where information is incomplete and the person ends up being disapproved. When he's disapproved, the only thing that he's left with, should he resurface, is appeal. So we've agreed that these applications, we'd classify them as dormant, and then all those applicants, there were written final letters to notify them about the status of their applications. All they need to do is write letters to the senior manager special pension, in this case myself, for request to reactivate their application. Therefore, these applications are not closed permanently. Then we talk of late applications. If you recall, honorable members, I talked about the late applicants. In the 2006 amendment, we had about 7,395 over 35 applicants that could not submit their applications in time. And then in terms of the under 35, only 1,978. If you look at both numbers, you'd realize that the efforts that were made in terms of awareness campaign has yielded positive results, because we've got a way lesser number than in the previous closing date. In total, we've got 9,373 late applications on our system. And then in terms of appeal challenges at the appeal applications level, honorable members, before the 2008 Amendment Act, there was a section within the Act called the Section 7.2. Section 7.2 gave an applicant an opportunity to challenge the decision of the review board then through submission of new evidence or new material facts for reconsideration. The 2008 Amendment Act have since repealed this particular section. As a result, this poses a challenge to the administration, because now the current group, which is the under 35, they do not have the same opportunity as the previous group where they could challenge the decision of the review board. Then another challenge that the administration is facing, when we had to assess because when you look at the number of appeals, this is once the applicant has been rejected by the Special Pension Board, if you look at the trend in terms of the approvals by the review board, we picked up that there's a huge number still being rejected by the review board, and that we needed to assess in terms of, but what are the reasons? And one of the major reasons was that applicants were resubmitting the same evidence whereby they were rejected previously by the Special Pension Board, which means a person produced certain information that was inadequate and he was told about it, he still resubmits the same information to the appeal or review board. As a result, though, it causes further delays in terms of processing, because now we needed to conduct at appeal level further research to assist the applicant bringing, addressing areas of concern whereby he was rejected upon. The following are the production statistics of the special pension since inception. Honourable members, the total applications received since inception is 771,272 apologies. Then the total approved applications were 21,490. Total applications declined, it's 35,895. Then the total late applications, which is the 2006 and the 2010, is 9,373. Applications in process, including the backlog, it's 4,514. Within this 4,508 is applications in various stages of the process, including the appeal as well. Now, honorable members, currently we have only 7,010 monthly recipient of special pension. If you look at the numbers, it may raise eyebrows to say, but from 71,000, why only 21,000 people were approved? The previous Special Pension Act before the 2008, remember, it focused on a specific age group. Now, the age group that was not supposed to apply, they resorted to non-statutory force applications. We've got in the GPF database about 23,700 members that opted for NSF that were approved through recognition of the non-statutory force. So you realize that in terms of the beneficiaries of all these programs, you'll add the 21,000 to the 23,000. But this also poses a challenge, because now, in terms of the Special Pension Act, when the 2008 Amendment Act was introduced, that age group that opted for NSF, they tried to apply to special pension through the 2008 Amendment, because now it focused on their age category. However, because they opted for non-statutory force, they were rejected in terms of Section 14 of Special Pension Act. Now, that Section 14 of Special Pension Act, honorable members, you may recall that Parliament has approved, or Cabinet approved, a memo on the 24th December 2010 for revision of the non-statutory force dispensation, which is the group that I earlier alluded to. In terms of special pension, the alignment will focus only on members of the non-statutory force that had special pension and opted for NSF through Government Employee Pension Fund, but are currently in service. We're only going to reinstate those that are currently in service and contributing to Government Employee Pension Funds. This is as per the revised NSF dispensation. And then the amendment was presented this year.
Okay, can you repeat that?
On the NSF. Okay, in terms of special pension. Special pension, according to the approved cabinet memo, will focus only on members that had special pension, but while receiving special pension and they opted for the non-special force through government pension fund. Now, social pension will reinstate only members that are still in service of any government department and also contributing to government employee pension fund. It only special pension. No, then this is twofold. The government employee pension fund will address the issue of the 5% contribution and the full NSF recognition. Yes. Honourable members, this brings me to the end of the presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. I think I'll open up for clarifications, comments, and questions. I've got one question myself. What is going to happen to the late submissions that you have? Camarada, you are recognized, and then the chairperson here. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, members of the Department of Finance. Chair, you will bear with me. I've got 101 questions. I don't know whether I should ask all of them now or you'll give us another round. But just adding on your question, in the presentation, nothing is said about what's going to happen to these late applications. All you are doing is telling us that there are late applications, but you are not throwing us anything our way as to what will happen then. But also, in the very same question, have you at least looked at this application and sort of find out if these people who have submitted the applications late, at least are they qualifying? And if they are, what are you going to do with it? Because if it, then they don't, then it's another thing. The second question, sir, is, let me go to the last slide of the presentation. That's a bit confusing. You are saying you will only reinstate special pension to those members or people who are still in service. We are talking of special pension. Surely, when we say special, to me, it means special. Why is it that you are concentrating on those? What about those people who exited, who are no longer receiving special pension because of whatever happened during the course of this whole thing? And I'll zoom in and focus mainly on the people who are in the Department of Defense, police, and you know the rest. Because surely confusion came in as to people supposing to have chosen between these two dispensations. And why is it now that you'll be only be focusing on those who are in service? And yet others, because of all of that confusion, then lost or are no longer receiving special pension because of all of that, and now you're only dealing with those in service. And then I'll come back, Chair. The question of taxation on the special pension. The percentage. What is the percentage of taxation? And why taxation on this special pension? Yes, any money is supposed to be taxed, blah, 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 blah. But I would like to understand the rationale and the percentages thereof. Then, Chair, there's a question of people who cannot be found. or who cannot be located. There is a whole range of reasons. Disappearance, sickness, or people failing to renew their life certificate. Do you at least endeavor to call on Home Affairs or the police and find out if these people are still alive or something is happening? Because I'm thinking more of the dependents in this case. Because we know for a fact that there are cases whereby these beneficiaries have disappeared and the special pension has been stopped and the people are supposed to be benefiting or living out of these benefits are destitute because of that, because these people cannot be found. Cases were not filed with the police. Home Affairs, there's no record of people having been registered as deceased. So what happens in that instance? And also, what is the policy regarding late applications? For now, Chair, let me stop there. I'll come back if you allow me for another round. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The last part, one slide, indicated that there were 71 applications, 35,000 of which were rejected, 21 approved, and 7 are the recipients. That 7,000, which are the recipients, is it out of 21,000 that has been approved? And then what about the difference, the 14,000 plus, when are they going to receive?
Thank you, Chair. I'm interested in the manner in which every time you amended the legislation from 2003, 2005, 2008. The efforts that you have taken in order to inform the beneficiaries. You have spoken about the road shows, and you have spoken about the parliamentary offices that the administrators were trained. And you have spoken about the media, that you use the media as well. If you have gone that broadly in order to advertise for beneficiaries to come forward, you wouldn't have the type of backlog that you have, almost 10,000 people, the 9,373 that you're talking about. You are saying these are late applications. These honorable members here, they run parliamentary offices. And we could just check if some of the administrators were trained. And the other thing is the committee joint deals with these matters of special pension for military veterans and so on. In the period 2009-2010, you have never come to join to make a presentation about firstly, the amendments, and then secondly, the road shows and the adverts and so on and so on. So had this particular committee received a presentation about these issues, we are able to link with our own structures, you know, parliamentary offices, we call in visos, and military veterans do go to the offices of these honorable members. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Now, with respect to the submission of information by applicants to the board, you say the board rejects the applicants. and then the applicants resubmit. And when applicants resubmit, they submit the same information. Now, let me give you one example. There's a combatant whom I recommended. And the recommendation, the application did not go well. I'm not the only one, some of the honorable members here. And they never even called, your board never called the verification board to check if the references that we have made are indeed true or not. You spoke about house visits of people who have written references. I've never had a house visit. And I've never had a call. Despite the fact that I've given quite a number of telephone numbers. Now, what you are saying is the verification board and the special pension board, there's a problem there. When they return the applicant, they don't ask questions from the applicant about what is actually required. You see, with respect to the TRC, if you ask for amnesty, they will ask you a number of questions. They will say, in the mission that you conducted, how many people got injured? How many died? What type of device did you set? Is it a limpet mine or whatever other type of device? They ask specific questions so that when you ask for amnesty, you are able to explain. Your board, they don't know what questions to ask. They don't know what questions to ask. Why? Because members of the Special Pension Board are not acquainted with the subject matter that they are dealing with. So what they do is to return applicants. Chairperson, it is just the various legislation the various amendments that have taken place. Maybe at a later stage we'll make a concrete proposal with regard to a proper presentation on those matters. Thanks for now, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me first start by welcoming the presentation, but also apologize that as the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, we are a committee that was supposed to be talking about progress and the successes of the program. And unfortunately, today as we meet the department with a lot of complaints from our members. I will catch up from where Honorable Monzisi indicated, where you reject an application, and in most rejections, when you seek more additional information, you seek additional more information in terms of references, whilst the references that were provided were not consulted to confirm the eligibility of the application, which to us is a problem. In a sense, that also encourages corruption or fraud as far as our members are concerned, because you are forcing them to give information they don't have. And we want that area to be properly scrutinized and corrected. The same as Honorable Munzisi have indicated. I know there are many applicants where I appear as reference. But I don't recall even in a particular day where I've received a call, just a call, not a house visit, a call, to say we have this person here who has applied and you appear to be a reference to this person. Do you know the person? I have never received any of those calls. But all that we see is our members being rejected when they have to qualify for these benefits. I also want to take from what my colleague have indicated around the question of age. And I want you to recognize that I've apologized at my initial stage to say, as the beneficiary, possibly in all you are doing, we were supposed to contribute in ensuring that our members benefit. You see, our experience in South Africa is not in line with your act. It's not in line with your act in the sense that there are members who joined Umkhonto weSizwe at the age of 12. There are members who started to be active without being members of Umkhonto weSizwe at the age of 10. In exile, you had a structure called Masupatsela. And Masupatsela were members who were at the age of 15 above. Now, we don't know, because I have not participated, more especially in the presentations, in motivations, to highlight some of these things. Because when you decide on exclusion, you decide on exclusion in facts. But whether these facts were taken into consideration or not, we don't know. We see in other countries, like when you look at Somalia, you look at Kenya, you see children at the, below the ages of 10 carrying armory and shooting. I don't know how do we separate it from our situation in South Africa, because in our situation in South Africa, even children at primary level were throwing stones. And as a result, when their parents leave the country, they left with those children. What do you call them? The other part, Chairperson, which is a part that I want to make emphasis on a lot. When a person has made an application and you are not satisfied with the information provided, do you have a help desk where that person can be taken through and told here and there, your application is not satisfactory? Because a rejection in terms of more information without identifying that information and seeking more references, to us, is not more information. It is frustrating beneficiaries. And we wish that these things be corrected and people begin to benefit as they qualify. And it will also please us, some of us, if one day I receive a call from your office verifying a person, so that even tomorrow when we are seated here, I should be witness to say, yes, I was called to verify a member, whether that member ultimately succeeded or not.
Done. Thank you very much. Before I hand over to the department, just one question. The actual purpose of the deadline is Is it administrative, or why should we have a deadline? Thank you.
Chair, before I allow Gabriello and Study to answer the difficult questions, allow me to deal with the easy ones. Firstly, just to indicate that the officials present here, their main task is to implement Parliament's legislation. And hence the amendments that have been coming from time to time from this Parliament. So all the amendments. First, the legislation itself was passed by Parliament in 1996 and given to officials. And the officials are then required to implement the legislation with strict adherence to its letter and spirit. So the question that the chairperson asks with regards to the deadline is written in that legislation. And therefore, when officials say that this application has missed the deadline, it is because any action contrary to that for the officials would be breaking the law. You will see that in 2003, the main reason for the amendment was to accommodate the applications that had missed the deadline. So in order to address the issue of cases that have missed the deadline, this Parliament has to give that direction through legislation. So, and as Gabriel did indicate in his submission, that until this Parliament gives a different directive, their hands are tied. So I wouldn't want them to try and say that themselves, because I don't think they are in a position to say to Parliament, go and pass legislation. But once legislation is given to them, they just need to implement. And also the other question, Chairperson, you asked at the beginning was whether Honorable Daniels also asked if the officials have looked at the late applications just to see whether they do qualify. I have given instructions to the officials to do that once they have dealt with the entire backlog, because the difficulty was that whilst addressing the backlog, looking at the ones that otherwise cannot be processed because they have missed the deadline, it would be futile to work on those until such time that they are given directions to work on them. But I've requested that as soon as the backlog has been dealt with, it would help them to look at those applications just to see whether, other than missing the deadline, they do meet the either criteria as laid down in the legislation. So that process is going to be unfolding. But the biggest crisis, Chairperson, has actually been the backlog. Let me also indicate that what Gabriel also did not mention with regards to our communication strategy has been constant engagement with political organizations at senior level. I have personally written several letters to the Secretary Generals of all the political parties that are impacted upon by this legislation. Every time there is an amendment, every time there is an appeal to try, particularly when we get closer to the deadline, because special pensions is political by its nature. And unless the political organizations are on board, we are unlikely to be able to address some of the problems we have. Some of the problems we have, as we've correctly indicated, have to do with the biographies. We do not expect our comrades and combatants to be able to complete biographies to the T. And therefore, we would also, and we have been calling on political organizations to verify those at the level of the political organizations.
And we did receive some level of cooperation, but I must say, Chairperson, that the level of cooperation has actually not been to our expectations, because the difficulty we had was dealing with the headquarters of all three organizations, the African National Congress, the Azanian People's Organization, and the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania. The responses and the cooperation only went and was only useful in as far as deploying verifiers at the GEPF offices, because those verifiers were the people that actually assisted, and that is why you'll find administration also could not run as smooth, because you would understand that in order for people to be able to be also administratively astute, they would also need some level of training, and from time to time political parties would pull out their deployees and deploy somebody else, or deploy somebody that did not have the requisite skills. But that communication has been ongoing, and we had also requested that political parties should also assist in terms of getting our structures lower than the national executive to deal with these issues at regional and at branch level. But we felt that the only way that that information could go down to the structures would be through the national executives of the organizations. So that I can attest to letters that I personally had written to all the secretary generals, and all the communication is available for the committee should they require so. But also to indicate that one must thank the committee for having invited special pensions for, I must say, the first time. But special pensions has been reporting to Parliament on a regular basis, both in terms of the annual report of the National Treasury, but also a number of times with the amendments, because even the legislation would be processed here in Parliament, and the Portfolio Committee and later Standing Committee on Finance has been monitoring progress, and we've been reporting. I would normally lead the delegation since 2008 when I joined the ministry. And we would do those at the request of Parliament any time, and that is why I believe we're here today, because irrespective of which committee calls the department is supposed to give an account, and that is why we're here. And I would want to undertake, Chairperson, that in future we would be available again, whichever the committee is. But just to indicate that this has been happening on a regular basis. We have been to Parliament a number of times, and progress has been reported on. So, and the training of the PCOs, I'm not sure when last we appeared, was it a month ago before finance? Some members did indicate that their administrators had been trained. And again, that communication would have gone to the PCO office here in Parliament to indicate that there is that kind of training, and those PCO administrators that came were the ones that were sent by the Parliament and their organizations. The issue of the life certificates, which Comrade Daniels and Comrade Nombego raises, Honorable Daniels, sorry. the issue of the life certificates. Honorable members, that's precisely the reason and the whole point behind the life certificate. It is to check the availability of the recipient. So if the life certificate is not returned, it means that the recipient is no longer there. Because it's just to check whether the person who's supposed to receive is either still alive or is still eligible to receive the pension. Maybe he's immigrated or something. So there could be nobody else that would benefit if the life certificate is not responded to. But also if the recipient of the pension is still there, the only way you would be able to get, that is why even in departments, to, in order to check whether there are ghost employees, you need to ask people to fetch their salaries instead of paying them into their bank account, so that you are sure that it still reaches the desired or the correct recipient. So we take it that if the life certificate is not responded to, and if the person hasn't received her pension and does not show up, it's either that person is no longer there or that person is no longer eligible. Again, there are quite a number of questions with regards to the late applications. I think I've addressed that it is the legislation that sets the deadline, so it would not be it would be outside of the law to process applications when that has happened. But Parliament has all the powers to be able to address that as and when Parliament is ready to do that. And the issue of biographies, I'm also in constant communication with political parties to request political organizations to assist people that are applying with the biographies, because mainly you try and comrade, honourable members, that the reason in most cases for the rejection of the applications is not necessarily what you as a referee has written. If you as a reference had written something, and perhaps my understanding is that the reason why you are not called is that your submission is accepted, but the reason for the rejection may not necessarily be your reference. Because if we look at legislation, in order to qualify, Section 1 of the legislation, I hope members have got the act with them. It just says that right to a pension. Section 1, sub 1 says a person who made sacrifices or served the public interest in establishing the non-racial democratic constitutional order and who is a citizen or entitled to be a citizen of the Republic of South Africa has the right to a pension in terms of this act. If that person, one, was at least 35, that's now the previous one, which has now since been amended, on the commencement date. Two, was prevented from providing for a pension. And that is why I said earlier, this is but one of those interventions that seek to address those ills of the past. Because I indicated earlier that there are other interventions that government has. We currently have the military veterans legislation before us. We have dealt with the NSF also that seeks to address part of these problems. But the special pensions addresses a particular and specific area. If a person was prevented from providing for a pension, so you can only be prevented from providing for a pension when you have reached working age. Because you cannot, I hear Comrade Ali, Honorable Mazia says some of our combatants were in the trenches at very early ages. But the purpose of this one only sought to address the issue of not being able to provide for your pension. And that is why even now trying to address the disparities between the NSF and the special pensions says we cannot penalize people that were not able to provide for a pension by charging them the 5% earlier. And therefore, that is why the latest amendment says that 5% must also be reversed and be taken care of in the manner that it is now taken care of. So if we read the legislation, that is what binds the implementation at an official legislation. And I would want to appeal to members to study the legislation, and should there be areas in the legislation that require that, we would be at the service of the committee to come and be the servants of this parliament in implementing whatever legislation has been put in place. I now leave the difficult questions to Kabelo and study.
Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Through you, Chairperson, let me attempt to address the question of taxation on special pensions. As you are aware, there are taxation laws that deals with allowances and benefits of any nature. So it is within that that the special pension benefits are taxable. It is not a decision that is taken via the administration of the unit itself. So obviously for me it goes back to the issue of legislation. Probably if there is a compelling reason that these should not be taxable, then they should be addressed through legislation. But as it currently stands, South African Revenue Service, as the custodian of the taxation laws, determine what benefits and allowances are taxable or not. And it can only be a process of harmonization to say maybe if that is not desirable, do we exempt these through the Special Pensions Act itself? Because the taxation laws are very clear in terms of which benefits are taxable and which ones are exempt. So for me, it goes back to the drafters of the legislation to say, do you harmonize your laws in terms of benefits that are deemed not desirable to be taxed? So I guess it goes back to Parliament process of harmonizing the laws.
Honorable Chairperson, I would like to respond to the issue of non-statutory force. I think it was a question by Honorable Daniels. As to why only reinstate SP members who are still in service? What about those who has exited? Again, this is purely a legislation issue. The revised non-statutory force, we aligned our amendment to address what has been approved by cabinet. Not we cannot do anything outside the legislation, unfortunately. And the other question, which I think the Honorable Deputy Minister has really answered a lot. The other question, I think, was issue around why 21,000 were approved, but only 7,010 are receiving on a monthly basis. Honorable members, if you look at the Special Pension Act, it talks about people's right to pension in terms of a person who served, who brought about the new dispensation. These are the ones received on a monthly basis, the ones that were approved and are still alive and are received on a monthly basis. Now, the difference that were paid are the beneficiaries of some of the members that have since passed on. Now, in terms of Special Pension Act, if you look at the 2005 Amendment Act in my presentation, it was an introduction of benefits, whereby in the past, prior to the 2005 Amendment Act, the spouses were only receiving lump sum after the partner have passed on. But upon the introduction of the 2005 Amendment Act, the spouses were now allowed to receive a monthly pension. We've been currently approving and sending letters to those spouses or widows, widowers, who have since been paid the lump sum and they need to now be paid the monthly pension. That's number one. Secondly, is an issue of the dependents in absence of the surviving spouse. Where there is no surviving spouse, the beneficiaries are the dependents, who are the kids, who ultimately becomes orphans. Now, in terms of the Special Pensions Act, an orphan or a dependent is paid up until the age of 18 in terms of the monthly. I'm trying to address the issue of the monthly. After the age of 18, A dependent needs to prove or make submission that he is still in school. Then he'll receive a monthly up to the age of 23. Now, when he reaches the age of 23, unfortunately, as per legislation, as per Special Pension Act, that special pension will cease. Now, if the orphan or a dependent, by the time of death of the receipt of the pensioner, was suffering from disability or permanent terminal illness, that particular orphan will receive monthly pension until death. It's as per Special Pension Act. So, unfortunately, these recipients are only eligible people that are receiving a monthly basis along those lines.
If I may also add on the exited members. The exited members, I think the response here was with regards to the special pensions and the NSF adjustment for the members in service. Those that have exited, I also have taken it upon myself to monitor this on a daily basis. I receive a daily report on the implementation of the new NSF amendment. Even though the other one, the Act itself, the amendment has not been passed, we discovered that some of the redress can actually be implemented, and DOD can attest to that, that we're working with them. To the exited members, so far we actually have processed 3,191 of them. The difficulty we have in refunding them, because for them, the exited ones, it's not adjusting the service. The one Kabila is talking to is to adjust the service to accommodate the five. The exited one, they need to be refunded into their bank accounts. I know I've personally met people that have received those refunds. The other one, actually, the other comrade wanted to know whether you can go ahead and use this money because he is not sure whether it belongs to him. We've processed 3,191, but the difficulty we have, of those 3,191, 2,298 bank accounts, which is 72% of that, has been rejected because of the length of time. Some of these combatants received those lump sums, and they have not been having an income since that period. So their accounts have now since been deactivated by the banks. What we have done, again, also working with the Department of Defense, because some of them were actually exited members that had been incorporated, that had been taken on board, integrated in the department. We're following up on these people because their refunds are ready to be given to them, but we cannot get hold of them. In addition to that, we are also engaging with political organizations to assist us in tracing some of those people because all of them, they can be traced back to their political organizations because none of the beneficiaries of this pension are not attached to any political party. So one would actually also just call upon members to assist us if there are those people that are that are supposed to be beneficiaries of this refund who might be in need. The constituency offices can assist, but our regional offices also have been asked to work and to accept those people that submit their verified banking details. But that's the other part of the NSF exited members. They are taken care of. That these have been calculated of the 3,191. The only difficulty is that the banking details are no longer valid, so the refunds were rejected by the banks. So we're waiting for people to come back, but also we're taking steps to try and locate those people. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think we will have follow-ups. Comrade Daniels.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, on the last issue that was answered, I'm not hearing. I hear the Honorable Deputy Minister saying they will be reimbursed. But I'm not hearing why dealing with only those who are currently serving. That is one. Number two, are they going to reinstate the special pension? Because I think the bone of contention here is the special pension for those members who have exited. And on this one, this is directly or directed to the Deputy Minister. Are you linking special pension with non-statutory force pension dispensation? Because I think that's where, for me, the problem is. Because these are two processes, the special pension and the non-statutory force pension dispensation. These are two things. I think that's where the problem is for me. I want to hear the minister as to, because it seems to me they are linking these two, and these two, for me, they are two different processes. Chair, I just want to check. We were told by the presenter that the communication campaign went well and everything, but late application since continues or persists. It's persistent. Hence, quite a number of late submission. Why do you think there is? Secondly, do you have user-friendly forms that makes it for people who are filling these forms for them not to submit every required additional documentation in them? I have not heard anything, Chair, on the people who have been receiving special pension since its inception fraudulently and the cost thereof that is to be taken or that has already been taken. On the achievements that were mentioned, I did not hear anything about that. Chair, in their own right, we're talking about the community that people serve to contribute to bring the current order. Now, I'll give you an example. You have two members in their own right who served. In their own right, they're supposed to be receiving special pension. What happens in that? Do they both receive special pension? Because they qualified, and rightfully so. What happens? Because I've heard a lot of things. Now that the department is here, I want to hear from them. What happens? Two members, and let me add on to say, these two members are married. And they both qualify. They both supposed to receive special pension. Do they receive? That is one. Secondly, if one spouse passes on, what happens to the benefits of the other spouse? Whilst they are still married, mind you. The other one, what happens when a beneficiary in this instance, that is the dependents in particular, when they lose these two members who are married, who were benefiting, who were receiving the special pension, what happens? I have heard a lot of things that you cannot receive two pensions, blah, 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 but I want to hear it from the department. What happens? Because remember, for me again, this is still a unique kind of special pension that we're talking about. And lastly, Chair, I just wanted to check. I believe that since to a certain age, the dependents will exit on the special pension. Do you then, as a department, assist in terms of education? Because of course, we do not want a community, a society that is dependent on this pension? Do you then assist these beneficiaries in terms of the dependents now, so that when they exist, they exit the special pension at that age, then they are independent and financially independent, and not coming back to say, but this or that, or I'm still at school at this age, I have not finished school, I was dependent on this pension, and all that and all that. And I think that will be all, Chair. Thank you.
Honourable Deputy Minister, thanks very much for your responses. And to the officials, you see the statistics. Once you deal with statistics, it becomes stats. So many approved, so many declined, and so on. What we should do is to put the faces and the warm bodies behind the statistics and begin to understand the role that these individuals have played. We're talking of people who have sacrificed their youth, people who are prepared to lay down their lives in order for South Africa to be what it is. So all we will appeal for is the necessary sensitivity in dealing with matters of special pension. in 2006, we received a report on demobilization and the disparities in terms of the figures that were presented before us. That time, my secretary over there was present. And what we had that time was that the white warrant officer, who was demobilized from the SADF, they received a package of more than 800,000. And the white officers, you know, your majors, your major general, and so on and so on, they received between 5 and 10 million. Now, our non-statutory forces, when they were demobilized, bearing in mind that the first armed unit was established in 1961. So you have got 35 years. Those who have been 35 years in the MK, they got something like 40,000. Those are the figures that we received, a lump sum of 40,000. Yeah, you call it demo. And thereafter, there is this monthly grant that they receive. Now, what we are trying to show here are the disparities that have existed. So, when you introduce special pension, the minister has explained that the circumstances under which this specific pension comes is to ensure that those that have not worked and saved for their future are able to benefit. Now, once you create that type of dispensation for them and you begin to tax it, you see, as an income, now you no longer attach the label of special to this particular dispensation. Now, we have said before to the ministry that what they do it in Algeria and a number of other countries, Vietnam, I think, if a member has served 10 years of service in the non-statutory forces. What they do is to multiply it by two and then tax the member. This is applicable in Nigeria. The impact of the tax on special pension is reduced. Now, we want to be working with the ministry to look at a much more reasonable way of ensuring that special pension does become a proper way of benefiting our non-statutory forces. But the clarity that I wanted to get with respect to the amendment of the 2005 of beneficiaries of the spouses and also of the dependents was whether if the age limit disadvantaged them, are they able to get a lump sum? Because your cutoff age is 18. So if they are above 18, obviously, it ceases to. But now if an applicant is 25 years and is claiming, you know, for the parent who had deceased. Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson.
Already, Alan. Honorable Chair, I'm partly covered by the Honorable Chairperson, the Munsitz. I'm actually worried about this important, special, unique pension for the people who gave them their lives to bring South Africa as it is today, to the fund, to the little fund that they are supposed to get as a special and be taxed. Is this special for those who were not contributing, but now here? Is text. Why? I'm very much concerned. You get 30,000, you get 30,000 is text. You spend so many years in the struggle to bring South Africa, to bring freedom for the people of South Africa. But here, the little amount that has been set aside as a special is text. Why? I'm one of those. I spent 30 years and I'm conduit this way. I'm not talking for personality side. I'm talking, I'm the one with others, of course. But what little I get is text. And it's not text the same time. At the end of the year, you get a huge amount that you have to pay from the revenue. I'm the victim of that. Why? I'm concerned. That has to be looked at properly. People are old, spend many years all over the world. Little fund, special, unique, is text. Please, let this fund be look at again, not be taxed. Because people were not contributing at all. Thank you very much. I'm partly covered, but I have to say something. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Comrade Mazia.
Yeah, Chairperson, the other part is the part of the figures. If you make comparisons to the figures that are presented by the department, and you look at the figures, that we have from the military veterans department. You begin to ask many questions, because when we were working on the bill, the figures that were presented to us was more than 56,000 members. And as far as the applications or the figures that were are presented by the Department of Finance, we are no closer to that figure. Now then this begins to say that there is a problem in this whole program. I'm not saying the program is with finance. I suspect the problem is with both ourselves in the Department of Defense and also the Department of Finance and beneficiaries as well. Because if we are not coming forward for any other reason, Honorable Daniels was highlighting to the application forms themselves. At the initial stage of the program, when you go through those forms, you would see that if you apply, your application is going to be declined, because the conditions that are stipulated in the application form, they are so confusing that they exclude some members. Now, given that explanation, Chairperson, suggest that possibly we need either to have a workshop where we will understand both from our part what contribution should we make for this program to succeed, and also clap it together with our relationship with the Department of Finance and the Portfolio Committee on Finance, the Portfolio Committee that is responsible for this program. The Deputy Minister indicated that we are legislators, and whatever that the department implements is what is legislated. And that demonstrates weakness on our part as well, as lawmakers, because there are a number of areas that we may possibly have overlooked. So through you, Chairperson, I would rather suggest that we propose that we have either a three-day workshop to work on these documents, all of them, to see whether they talk to one another and where are the problems, so that we are able, even when we meet with our colleagues in the Finance Portfolio Committee, to know what we want and what is it that has to be done. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Before the department can respond, we've got very little time, and I understand there's a cluster that must hold a meeting in here, and we still have got DOT. So I'll give the Treasury only 5 minutes to wrap off.
Chairperson, first to support that, perhaps we need time again, just to workshop each other on some of the things, and that's why I appealed that if members could also familiarize themselves with the legislation, so that if there are any shortcomings, they are identified in the legislation, because at the end of the day, we can beat them as hard as we want, but we can't also expect them to break the same legislation that we have given them to implement. Chair, the first question that Comrade, that Honorable Daniels asks, In fact, Comrade and Honorable are actually very closely related. You can't be a comrade if you are not honorable. but the first question is, maybe I did not come out clear enough to say that there are two, the ones that Kabelo's presentation deals with regards to NSF are those that are in service. And I then indicated that those that have exited are dealt with in the form of a refund because they are no longer in the employ. And those are the refunds that I said. The snag that we have hit is the one of the rejections of their banking details that we request. And we have sent out these two structures of the movements, and also our offices stand ready to assist those people. And I'm also calling upon members of parliament also to assist us if there are people who are due for these refunds who cannot receive them because their bank accounts have been deactivated. But those are refunded in cash through their bank accounts because they are no longer in the employ. And the department is helping us because some of them had first been integrated and then they exited. So they are able to locate them in order to verify their banking details. Honorable Daniels, the NSF and the special pensions are linked because they address exactly the same situation of the deprivation of the pension. The NSF, and that is why this thing of now making sure that the two are actually aligned. Because when members were expected to choose, they would choose one. And if they choose the NSF, they would find that they are disadvantaged than those that are in the special pensions. So the amendment for this year was meant to address precisely that, so that people are not disadvantaged by choosing one over the other because they were not aligned. So now that they are aligned, you choose whichever you want to fall in, and you'll get the same benefit. The fact that late applications continue, again, is a matter of if people didn't get the message and they still think that they need to get, and some people talk to other comrades and those that are receiving, and the person says, no, but I didn't apply, and then people apply. But as the comrade Dan has correctly pointed out, that people put down their lives, people sacrifice their youth. You will also recall, comrade Dan, that, I mean, how difficult it was to get these combatants. And today, the reason why we have people, some of them benefiting, and even though they did not participate, is actually very painful. Because there are people who, now that there are these benefits, who want to benefit out of the process. If it was this easy to get people at that time to join the armed forces of our organizations, I don't think we would have struggled. But the problem we have now, and that is why, again, you'll find that it will be stringent, the forms will be scrutinized, because we have so many people, we still need to clean the system. I mean, some comrades here maybe also know people in our own areas who are benefiting from the special pensions, who we all deep inside know that these so-called comrades did not participate in the struggle. And some of our own people, because they did not meet the criteria of having served full-time in our organizations, were approached by other political parties. We sit with biographies that were completed by other political parties for people to enter the system because they were charging them money to complete the forms. Mm-hmm. It's been very difficult. In the outreaches that Kabelo is talking about, where I went physically out there to address some of these things, because we know the plight of our people. The saddening part was also the amount of people who want to take advantage of the system, who know that they actually did not participate in the struggle. Now that there are benefits, we all want to benefit. So with finding the right balance between the true beneficiaries of this and those that want to take advantage is also one of the constraints we have. And I would want to say the forms, honorable members, are very user-friendly, because all the forms actually mirror what the legislation says. The questions that are being asked seek to answer the questions that would then make the applicant qualify in terms of the legislation. So if those questions are not asked, it would mean that a person who does not qualify will be able to apply, and when we look at the legislation, that person will be rejected on the basis of questions having not been answered. The issue of the two members in their own right, they both benefit. They apply and they both benefit. I remember there was a problem when the other one dies. That has since also been addressed. Both of them benefit, and if members have any people who might have been left out when the amendment was made, the office is quite happy to look at that. These are some of the things we still continuously address. Correct. Dan talks about the warm bodies. In your 5 minutes, Chairperson, let me try and rush through, and if I've left anything, Kabelo will add. In terms of the stats, both Comrade Dan and Honorable Mazia raised the issue of the stats and also aligning the ones with the military veterans and special pensions, because it might be that the statistics are talking to different categories of people, and that is why there is disparity. But we're quite happy to look at that and respond if there is any disparity. But also the warm bodies, it would be useful. And that is one of the exercises we are embarking on with one of the NGOs that I belong to, where we are saying, let's get a proper database and forward it to our headquarters for that organization to look at whether there are people that might have inadvertently been omitted. Because there are people who might not have qualified because of their biographies or because of the administrative system, but in the organization itself. If the Secretary General of the organization is able to vouch for that comrade because we have that person in our CPR list and all our documents, those cases will be sent through appeal, and there is no reason why they should not be paid. So the purpose of the forms, once again, was not to exclude people. The issue of taxation, the first 300,000 of the pension is tax-free. There's a cascading a table that deals with the taxation of pension benefits. So the first 300,000 is tax-free. And the second part of that is taxed at a very concessionary rate. The only time where it becomes problematic for the tax is when your special pensions adds in addition to your other income, because your income is looked at holistically. At the end of the day, if that pushes you into a higher category, then it has a tendency of actually impacting upon you, because at the end of the day, the pensions, as I've indicated, there is a first 300,000 portion that is tax-free, and the rest is taxed on a cascading basis. I therefore would not be able to address individual cases, because we must then have to look at your entire income before we're able to arrive at exactly whether you're paying the correct tax on your income. Thank you. Gabriel, anything?
Thanks, Deputy Minister. I'll attempt to respond to the question of Honorable Muntisi regarding the issue of the 2000 introduction of benefits, especially around the dependents, in terms of what if by the time the pensioner dies, the dependent is over the age of 23, what happens then? It is within the Special Pension Act, we do pay survivors lump sum. But unfortunately, because the dependent would have been over the age of 23, he'll only receive a once-off payment, which is a survivor's lump sum. The survivor's lump sum would be 24 times or twice annual, 24 times what the pensioner was earning by the time of death. However, if there are more than one dependent, that will be equated amongst all the siblings or dependents. And there was another one on the same length by Honorable Daniels, I think. This one says, what efforts have been made when, because as and when this orphans and dependents reaches the, as and when they are receiving monthly, when they reach the age of 23, they are existing the special pension database or system. what efforts are being made to address these. Honorable members, we've been assisting the Military Veterans Department. I've been dealing with Colonel Jackson Letsolo all the time on the military pensions bill, also in assisting them how to incorporate the funeral benefits, because there's a whole lot of ranges on the beneficiaries of the addressed by that particular legislation, not special pension. Unfortunately, this particular one is not addressed in special pension. If the dependents reach a certain age, they will exit. There was a notion raised by Honorable Musia that perhaps the workshop where all the political stakeholders engage and see what certain challenges, because remember, from the inception of the Special Pension Act, it had its own philosophy or intention to address a specific need. But the question is, currently, does it address what it needed to? I think that particular forum will address those issues and then table it in Parliament. And once the law has been passed, we will implement accordingly. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, sorry, Chair.
Okay. What Honorable Dennis was talking about, Honorable Members, is a case whereby two people served together in their own rights. The question is, are they allowed to receive special pension? Deputy Minister has responded. The answer is yes. Then the next question was, what happens if one passes on? In terms of Special Pension Act, both would have received lump sums each. Now, once the other one passes on, the only available benefit will be a funeral benefit. And the other question as a follow-up would be, now, what happens now to the surviving spouse if that one passes on? Then it is within the Act, in the absence of a surviving spouse or partner, then we look at the dependents. And the dependents will be addressed same way as I've explained in terms of the age, 18-23. The dependents will be paid lump sum, and then the only lump sum benefit once off if they are over the age of 23. If they are below that, it's lump sum and monthly pension until they reach the age of 23. Remember, between 18 and 23, there must be proof that they are in school. And then a dependent who suffers from permanent and total disability by the time of the parents or a pensioner's death will receive monthly pension until death. I hope I've...
Thank you very much. I think it's time to thank the department, and surely we are definitely going to be having follow-up meetings. And there was a suggestion of a workshop for us, and maybe even with the Finance Portfolio Committee and so on. So thank you very much, and we'll definitely be in touch with you. Yeah. Especially on the workshop. Thank you very much.